interactions, so different technical treatings of material, material treatings of time, which ultimately produces a new politics, personal politics, social politics, or both. And then I was thinking about the shifting politics implied by the language, imagery, and aesthetics of environment. Very different from landscape, very different from background, foreground, which came up in both of yours, and then from talking about the body abstracted in space. So very different politics implied by the aesthetics of all of those terms. So it was a kind of progression. And then I've written down putting the body back in data, whether it's analog or virtual, embodying through absence and presence. I don't know if that's what the page says. Then three verbs: managing, questioning, interrogating, managing, gleaning, and reenactment. That's what I thought. So
pass, that's it.
Yeah.
So it's good, that little bit of a drama kind of chair and kind of going, I'm going to off the hoop. But guys, questions for any of our speakers? Yes, Ian.
I have a question in relation to the scale issue, which is, I see, intriguingly emerging. But Isabella, in terms of those I think I have seen one of those murals, but I haven't seen it for a long time, in terms of what I think you were referring to as your relation. What an incredible thing! It's in the room. It's in the room which they're living, but in fact, it's this other world. Mm. And then your very large work, 3 meters by 10 meters, was that real scale?
This is where the
blue.
The blue distance. Yeah, that was real scale. That was actually one to one. Yes,
you would. About your work, one to one photograph, and then your relations and your knowledge or experience of those sorts of walls within the living room.
I think that one, I didn't even tap into that in the talk, but the one-to-one, the experience of the place itself in terms of making, removal of that, and then producing the work at a scale where, as a viewer is in the space, there is a kind of orientation and of the body to that implies or has a correlation to real space, if you like. So it came, it's become, I didn't realise it happened kind of intuitively. I don't think I ever decided, and I don't have a logic in terms of why I select certain images for those works that are wall size. But I know that it has to do with the way the sort of the originals, or the ones that you would buy for your lounge room, they have that capacity to transport you somewhere, you know, in terms of your imagination or to escape somewhere. So, you know, images have always had that, the possibility to evoke that, potentially something that is, you know, kind of romantic but the scale has been kind of important. And the work that you're referring to, Ian, is actually a folly. And it's the first time that I actually montage something in my life as an artist, where I photographed, I did a large project called Blue Distance, where I tried to photograph a number of eye catchers in the UK for when I was there. And this was a folly that I photographed every outer and inner corner and then stitch them. So what happened with that show was that the work was 10 metres, and as you walked along it, it doesn't reproduce very well, there was that trompe l'oeil effect that the image was kind of receding and coming at you, and that was important, and that wouldn't have happened without the one-to-one thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh, do you want to say anything about scale?
Sorry.
Strikes me.
There was
scaling, which Sam brought up in your talk.
Yeah, I think it took me forever. I was using little analog tools to scale the actual size of the pumping station with the size of the graphs I wanted to do. And I didn't mention I also scaled it to the size of the gallery, and the height of the gallery is actually above the level of the sea now, and it's projected to be. So there's all other scalar things that you talk about, but scale diagrams, love
scale.
Yeah, Josh, I was just kind of thinking when you showed the kind of background, you know, the traditional data modeling stuff, and it just reminded me of Guattari's quote that, you know, scientific modeling is often systematically pessimistic. And throughout the presentations, I like that you return the conversation, Julie Louise, to politics, because I think the kind of aesthetics of politics is the possibility of approaching it in a different kind of affective realm than the always systematically pessimistic.
Mm.
And it seems certainly in your work as well that that kind of gleaning process is a way of kind of juxtaposing that kind of being stuck in experience.
Mm.
The imaginative potential.
Mm.
And Sam, it seems like there's something definitely kind of happening in the kind of affective realm as well that's beyond, like, that isn't the representational one-to-one modeling sort of stuff that you're doing. It is much more kind of generative for,
yeah.
I don't know where it's pointing yet, but I don't think you quite know yet.
Potential, just full potential.
Well, we'll wait and see. But the fact that it's not only reenacting Kate Bush, but there's a reenactment of the reenactment of that.
Yes,
and then there's
true.
A reenactment of you as an architect who's then trying to reenact getting back to drawing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this layers of reenactment that are going on. So I found the diagram to be the problematic in it, because it was very restrictive in a conceptual sense. The thing. So in a practice-led thing that's more a practice-based, the way that you would seem to be tackling it now, and I would lean more towards the practice-led model that you spoke about at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, yeah, and I think for me, I've always worked on watercolour because it stops me from, you know, you can't, also using a 2H, you know, you can't actually ever erase the line because it embeds into it.
Mm.
So, you know, for me, it's always been important to get out, of the thinking, to get onto the drawing page, and to actually think through the drawing. But it's just
I
been
love
so
the diagram.
I did.
Yeah,
I think
that's because you
guys
love
diagrams.
No,
that's not the case at all. I mean, Sam's diagrams come from a process-based, like. Approach to diagramming, not from a representational approach, and I think that's really important that's acknowledged.
I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with them. I'm just saying that as a process, you know, I think that they live in another area, and that there's a possibility that could be the one that's maybe being a restriction for you.
Mm.
Well, the other way to look at it is that by using the diagrammatic aesthetic in this methodology, that Sam is rendering it speculative and propositional as an appropriation of a diagrammatic aesthetic. That's what I saw in it, which is interesting seeing different things in the diagram.
Mm.
Did you have a question?
Mm.
Yeah. I'm finding a really strong tension between the use of a double H pencil and watercolours and a sort of parallel between a lack of the word flow in any of your diagrams, except for time, complexity and space, and the fact that you were representing yourself as a very fixed, almost robotic form, as a response
that
you were talking about to the programs that they were learning at UTS. And you wanted to insert an analog into that. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe to make the point about the watercolour process, I use the watercolour process. I use watercolour on the page in an absolutely flat way. So I'm using it in a cartographic way, and I'm filling in. I'm doing it in a very kind of laboured, tight, constrained kind of way, as opposed to allowing the watercolour to do its work, which I'm really interested in, and which, you know, in a way, I I would love to work like that, but it's, to me, it's about those kinds of constraints in the watercolour process.
Yeah.
So
but
that,
you're
that's
with dance, which is
yeah.
all that motion of the water.
Yeah.
So that's
and I think that's yeah. I mean, I think it's a really good point, and it's important to make that point because I want to get away from the representation and the existing representational systems around something like that. Dance has to therefore have a flowing line to it. You know, I'm interested in that relationship between translation and, you know, particularly the work of Marais and image, and I'm also interested in the cinematic, and because so I'm interested in that as sets of frames as opposed to the idea that it can be representing, you know, in between motions or something. Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah.
The temporal needs to have a place somewhere in that, even in the diagrammatic even.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me. Let me think on that. That's a good point.
Something to just sort of took on what you said about it not being complete, or what part, like the work, part of the work, or it never. And I just kind of really found an affinity with that almost, because I'm just, you know, in kind of engrossed in the idea of, you know, something being indefinite and it kind of finding new life and new ways of being presented and represented. I think there's something there. Like, does it actually have to be? And is that with the temporal? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. Is it the sense of completion of the work, or where does it end? How do you actually get to that point?
And there was a feeling in all of your presentations about undo. And another thing I had down was about contingency. Intervening in things, be it personal histories, be it representations of climate change, be it media histories and what they mean about bigger architectures, but intervening in things that seem to have a completion and a resolution, and through artistic process reminding us again of contingency and making them and just in terms of this era and this time, and that act of a reminder taking stock, pausing to engage with this profound contingency, I mean, certainly comes across with something like social issues. So this, one of the challenges, especially in a high-resolution, high-media reality, which by its very nature, the imagery ultimately feels very close, it feels very finished, is this idea of revealing the innate susceptibility actually within contingency.
I think it's really interesting that when, particularly in the present moment, when performance chooses to go down, as it is at the moment, a kind of path around reenactment, that's kind of cool and okay. There's something still so, because, you know, it's time-based, or because it's, you know, always in a process of liveness in relationship to its histories. But there's still some kind of a real fear about letting go, withdrawing, that it can't be, like... a processual as well, and that it couldn't be the space in which we go to reenact or redraw. And what I really love about your practice, Sam, is that you bring these two things into like jolt with each other, and it's not easy, you know, because you're bringing those two histories into relation. Mm. And then, you know, and then you're saying, and what I'm going to do again is reenact the drawings, and it's like, whoa!
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I've been fighting.
Yeah, <it's laughs> like,
I'm freaking out.
Go
about it.
For it. You know, just do it. And like,
do it.
Yeah, just go for it. I mean, do something crazy. redraw it, just redraw it, redraw it at different scales. I don't know, just don't be hindered.
It's the watercolour thing.
Just the watercolour
thing.
Yes.
Stop up.
See, that's been, but that for me is part of it, is the expensive piece of paper that you just draw, you just, you've got to just. I can just do it in the onesie. Maybe that's what, that's what I needed.
Yeah, you have to turn it into a performance.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Liberate yourself.
I think I can do it when I'm in the onesie. I can do anything in the onesie. Anyone can do anything.
You can become the ruler, the square and the ruler.
We've got 20 minutes left, and so maybe we can have questions for any of the, what's called the plenary.
Or maybe we could just have questions as well about the nature of the things that have been said in relationship to the sort of practice that we all can see and the benefits that we can get from it, exploring it and sharing this information. I think is something that, you know, gives us a chance to get inside some of these practices, and that these sort of discussions hopefully can carry on when you meet each other in the corridors and stuff, because we're going to be around each other all the time. The more we know, sometimes the more the discussion maybe can grow, especially, I mean, I'd love to spend more time talking to Josh about the fact that we're living in an engineer's logic, and all of that stuff is about, is really determined by engineers, and now engineers want to take over design, and the whole world is going to be suddenly design engineered, and at least things are all, laptops are all an engineer's logic, code is an engineer's logic, and we're all sort of still possessed sometimes within it. I'm thinking of the climate change, I'm thinking of the Anthropocene and a hyper-object of Tim Horton, and the way that we're conceiving of these things, like the injection of a simple band-aid solution that an engineer is going to... But the point is that we could have these kind of discussions now, you know, more fluently, and get on to these things that are important. And I love you as well, just from, I'm sure everybody did, but you were shadowed in the black of the cabinet.
So bad photograph, such a bad photograph.
But it's such a great, it's just great. You in the otherness, you shadow in the other, it's just like, it was so poetic, you know, you think everybody would have thought that, gone, wow.
I had my own observation across the six speakers.
Enlighten us.
Bring it all together.
What I want to say is it's time for coming back, because there are to all of the speakers, so Michelle and Ian and Lindsay, who spoke in the first part of the event. It seems to me that with the digital technological revolution and with the explosion of data, it puts the image right back at the question of the heart of ideas and values at stake in society. And even, you know, Lindsay, with you working with food, you work with an image economy around that. Items coming through, and that still, I think it's very interesting to move into that sensory realm, and where we data is very much in the image world. I think that's its own really, really interesting. So I think, it's like Jean-Luc Godard said, you know, there's a symbolic centrality to the question of art, while there may not seem to be a political centrality. And the thing is to understand the political potential within that position of being symbolically central. That's so that's coming, acts of remediation, attitudes towards materiality and technicity of the image / aesthetic world and its potential. Do you see what I'm saying? In all of the practices, from the revisiting realism through to, you know, the surveillance and your work, auto surveillance and the surveillance of the military. anyway, there, I could go on, but there were a few. The remediation and the aesthetics and politics that you were talking about, the aesthetic domain as the field of political possibility.
And I think the thing that I was trying to think through was Tillerson's kind of shoring up of contingency, of that if this happens, we will adapt, in this kind of attempt to return climate change to this kind of thing that we can engineer or solve or sort our ways out. And it's kind of like, I wonder whether that kind of possibility that you're talking about, that the political possibility of not having the solution in advance, like whether that's the return of hope from the doom and gloom that faces us. I was just kind of struck by how certain he was that the ifness.
When I watched that Rex Tillerson thing, the primary way in which I initially engaged with that, I see that as an aesthetic proposition. The whole body language, this is the performativity of the two. That the primary thing coming through is a use of aesthetics in that. It's not about the political message primarily. It's really aesthetic strategies, and you see that from the whole way that the situation is performed and constructed. Right there, that's a I guess that's what you were drawing attention to in his and the irony that there is a Texan cartoon character running who's Secretary of State. I can't make it up, and he is that kind of mythology. Another thing that came through was myth as well for me, like the way that many of you were talking about history and time, and I was thinking about myth a lot.
If we just go back to your point about the image, and I mean, I remember thinking and expecting that the visual would be an incredibly powerful tool. But I must say, in the last 10 years, text and Twitter and what have you, it's probably become more powerful. And I hear what you're saying in terms of the body language and the aesthetic, but ultimately it is the text message that is more likely to form policy.
I guess I'm questioning that. I actually think that it's empty. I think that the fullness is relatively empty, but for sure, Twitter sphere.
Well, I think we have the notion that when I start those trends as finished conferences, that's a fundamental question is what are we contributing to the critique of the image now? So what are we doing to either work against the flow that 10 years ago was Flickr and everything else, where the images were dominating the sea, this cloud of imagery of all data everywhere, ubiquitous data now that we can pick up. So how do we engage in this now? So, it would go to language to some extent because it's highly complex of how we actually interfere with this as the image world. And I'm more fundamentally really interested in some of the latency of the image now, where the image is where they're hidden, and they need to be brought back out again. And I think this, which is the topic of the next Transition Image Conference.
Thanks, Paul.
Brought to you by.
What's the difference then, or is it impossible and not interesting to think about discerning?
I don't care about the difference, really.
It's not a real biscuit.
And Louise, maybe she wanted more credit for this, but Louise was just saying she reckons that most young people today think about Anzac biscuits in terms of being joke biscuits, like a vehicles.
Because
of the butter, because you melt the butter as part of it, so that gives you an opportunity to infuse the marijuana in the melted butter. Most biscuits, you don't start with the melted, like chips.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Learned something today.
Yeah. But anyway, she thinks that the whole connection with that mythology around the origin point of those has probably been lost, and that most people making them today are more thinking of them than their connection with the Neither had I. Elise knows a lot about it, though.
My dad came from Eastern Europe, and he was always trying to recreate the taste of his mum's cooking.
Mm.
And that, I think, was a history in the ingredients. It was a memory. Mm. It was a myth for him, because he could never go back. Mm. So, in some sense, that fiction in his mind was being fulfilled by a future combination of ingredients.
Mm.
Kind of an interesting sort of cast out into the river of a bit of fishing line. Yeah.
Perhaps a summing up question, because I for my own indulgent purposes, from every speaker, so we've got 10 minutes left. Even just quickly, you mentioned, Sam, in your talk, you realised, you thought, my God, all this work, it's all been about time. And so each person, what they're trying to do with just obviously a statement, one thing or whatever, or what they're trying to do with time in their work, like slowing up, interrupt, accelerate, do you know what I mean? Make a statement about what's going on. If you have, I felt that Ian's head in your hand, I felt that it was about, that methodology is very much about slowing down time, that process of
work. I guess capturing it.
Yeah, means slowing down. But if you have an agenda or a thinking around, you know, time in the temporal,
you going to ask us to talk about?
I just thought it would be nice to wrap up as a thing that it's easy for anyone to kind of say.
So if you might go first. To start with, there is the historical dimension, you know, the Enola Gay, the clamp and what have you. Yes, it was a metre away from fat boy, it really was, whatever. So that's a kind of interesting object, because on the one hand it's atoms, and on the other hand it's aluminium, on the next hand it's a clamp, and on the next hand it's a clamp beside fat boy. So in terms of our relationship to objects and history, that sort of demonstrates all the range of experience that we can have with an object, dependent upon narrative, of course. What's the story you're telling about that object? So there is that history dimension. But I guess in relation to the kind of political issue of my work, which you talked about at the break, and in relation to time, then there's one very, very significant element within the Australian war memorial which is not represented, and that's the Black Wars, the Aboriginal Wars, which is a hugely contentious issue in the history of the Australian war memorial. It's actually mellowing, and we're kind of getting closer to an inclusion of that. The second one, of course, is border protection. So I was always particularly interested in getting that into the war memorial, recognition of the role of border protection, whatever you might think about it politically, socially, culturally, humanitarianly, but in terms of getting it in. So it's really kind of capturing, this is a museum, it's a memorial, so it's in a sense capturing, you know, the patrol boat, the aeroplanes, the Norforce characters up in East Arnhem Land, and paradoxically, fingers crossed, I think this would be the case, those rubbings that are captured in real time will outlast the aluminium ship, the aeroplanes, and all the people tearing around in uniform. So it's an interesting capture of time, and then of course that's with all museums, it protects them, looks after it, archives it, and cares for it.
I think for me I'm interested, particularly at the moment, in terms of a way of working with process. So I'm, and not time and process, but I'm thinking, you know, for me I'm interested in how we start thinking about these things in terms of the way in which we design spaces or the process of designing spaces, so that we're not thinking about, you know, the body, we're thinking about the body in time, and then what does that mean then? Like, and what's the kind of the conundrum there for engaging time within that process?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm trying to work through.
Yeah,
I kind of, I guess, I mean, in the way that I think about it, time and place are kind of always interlocked. So, you know, from the research that I've been doing, obviously, recently, it's, you know, thinking about how if you're, you know, connected to a place, how a connection sort of forms to, you know, in terms of anthropological place or a place that has sort of roots and sense of belonging, and how you, when you become separated from that place, as a migrant, let's just say, how it's not just about a sort of separation from that place itself geographically, it's a temporal separation as well. So there's a kind of intrinsical kind of link between place and time. And I guess in my, you know, in my interest, of course, photography, hello, you know. So I guess I see those, And yeah, and the location thing that I talked about, the kind of indexicality of position, GPS, non, you know, So it's,
I think one of the things I find really interesting about the debates around climate engineering is one of the arguments put forth by proponents of it is the notion of buying us time. So that basically countries around the world are saying, to put it frankly, we can probably get our shit together by the middle of the century. Problem is that physics and chemistry don't give a damn because they're operating on a different time frame to that. And I find that a really interesting conundrum, the notion of basically buying us time.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing to get our head around. So trying to represent that photographically, as opposed to say something with, say video or something like that, for me is a way of like trying to get people to stop and pause on something which is timely. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I forgot what I was saying. Different place, different time. I guess because I work with processes that so precisely rely on a kind of a sort of indexical relationship to time, you know, and everything now I try and do is about not having that relationship within the technologies themselves. Ultimately, it's about experience, you know, kind of in time with time, or not even having the time there as a sort of as the thing, because as soon as you say time, it's like the words we hear: capturing, slowing down, speeding up, and they're all the things that you know my medium does, and that's what it's kind of, you know, predicated on. So for me, it has to not have that, it has to have just experience.
No time.
There's
out of time.
No time.
Time out.
Yeah, brilliant. It's about disappearance of time, isn't it? Like that whole idea. Picnolepsy, wasn't it?
I think instead of talking, I'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
To the biscuit. It's absorbed a lot of water.
It's fattened up.
And it's definitely more like edible now, but in a disgusting kind of way.
Way less tasty. Way less tasty.
So it's probably, it absorbed probably that much water and it left behind sort of a residue of kind of well, it's like a well hydrated pee.
So we'll end on that demonstration of time. Thanks everyone for coming. Thanks so much for the speakers.
And thank you.
Thank
you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. No, seriously, thank you for doing it. Is this going to happen, like, you know, every month?
Once every 2 weeks.
Like,
well, the thing is about the right proportion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cross-pollination
right there.
So next I'm going to show you my new work.
Woo-hoo! There's a positive,
I was so taken with gleaming. As a choice of a word, I think it's really beautiful.
Lot like load historically. Polishly.